And welcome to this week's Talk of the Rock. I'm your host, Jared Griffin. This month, in response to the protests and the Black Lives Matter movement, we've been focusing a lot of the episodes this month on race and talking about race and how it's connecting to some of our communities here in Kodiak and in Alaska. So we've talked with some Black Lives Matter advocates and Alaska Native advocates, and this week we're going to be talking with some Asian American and Filipino American advocates. In the studio with me now, I have Deborah Batanga, who is go ahead and give us your 30-second introduction that you gave me.
I'm Deborah Batanga, a recent college graduate from the Evergreen State College, and I moved to Kodiak when I was 12, so back in 2009, and I'm the eldest of three.
And you're heading off to Columbia?
Yes, for a master's in sociology and education, hopefully.
Oh, fantastic. And then on the phone, we have Dr. E.J. David, professor of psychology at UAA. Welcome.
Hey, good to be here.
Dr. David, could you introduce yourself to Kodiak? I'm kind of putting you on the spot. Okay. Do you have like a little 30-second introduction about the kind of work that you do?
Sure. Hey, Kodiak. My name is E.J. David. I'm a Filipino immigrant born in the Philippines, and I moved to Barrow, Alaska, which is now Utqiagvik, Alaska, when I was a teenager. And now I'm a professor of psychology, and what I study is racism and colonialism and how that affects people's mental health and well-being. There you go.
Great, perfect. we'll start with you, EJ. How would you describe the situation with race right now in the country or in the state? What is happening as you see it?
Oh, wow. Well, you know, all of this isn't new, and really in many ways is not surprising. You know, this country, our institutions and our systems, you know, it's sick. And I think, you know, it's showing up a lot now, and a lot more people are talking about it now, but it's always been, you know, quite sick. You know, because, I mean, you know, it's a country that was, you know, founded on stolen lands and the genocide of indigenous people, and a country that was built on the enslavement of Black people. And so then, you know, it's also a country that rose to become a world superpower because of colonialism and imperialism. And, you know, and it exploits lands and resources of, you know, people from different parts of the world. You know, it's a country that was founded on, you know, the idea of white supremacy and manifest destiny. So, you know, it's not surprising that we are at a reckoning right now, and that I think people, especially Black people and other people of color, indigenous people, I think right now they are fed up. And I think our country is being forced to confront this reality that we've tried to ignore and forget and distort and erase and deny for mm-hmm. a very long time. Yeah. So, and I think in Alaska, you know, so just connecting this to Alaska, you know, we're not, you know, spared, or we haven't been immune, you know, to the history of you know, colonialism and racism that has inflicted the rest of the country. You know, just focusing on, you know, the most tangible issue right now, which is police violence. You know, data shows that when we take population size into account, people are more likely to be killed by police in Alaska than in any other state except for New Mexico, I believe. So we're second in the nation in terms of the likelihood of getting killed by police. And then if you're a Black person in Alaska, you face the highest risk of being killed by police here than in any other state except Utah. So we're second in the country there too. And then when you look at indigenous peoples in Alaska, if you're an indigenous person in Alaska, you face the highest risk of being killed by police here than in any other state except New Mexico. So we're second there as well, right? So racism has been around in this country forever, since its founding. In fact, this country, was built on racism, and Alaska, has a similar history.
Mm-hmm. Deborah, you've been, I know you kind of sometimes put yourself on like the front lines of this kind of advocacy. How are you seeing the situation right now in regards to race?
At least for me with Alaska, like cannery workers, my dad worked in the cannery for 40 years, and the cannery is the site of racism where big corporations who are for profit until to this day put different race and they pit them against each other, Filipinos against Chinese, Filipinos against Alaska Natives, Filipinos against white Russians, and many other migrant workers who've been here. And I know Filipinos died on the line for freedom and human rights just in the slime line, and salmon feed the world since way back in centuries. And during the World War II, I remember seeing a picture of the canned salmon being sent to the Philippines by Filipino workers. And I was like, this is so interesting. Like, we have immigrants here and the right. salmon is being sent back to the home. I'm like, what? Yes. So that's where I'm coming from, is my cannery worker background with my parents.
Yeah. And I think that's, I'm really glad you brought that up, because I don't think it really hasn't come up so much, in terms of labor, for sure. So, what's going on? Do you see other kinds of connections with how we talk about race issues related to Filipino Americans and Asian Americans? What do you see is kind of going on in the discourse about it all, Deborah?
From a student perspective, at least graduating from Kodiak Island Borough School District, middle school and high school, it wasn't talked much. Like, it took me college to be part of a protest back in 2017 with Evergreen through our Black Student Union. And I was like, this is my first time.
I remember that story.
Yes, it was all over the news. Evergreen was it was all over the media. I remember being shoved by the police, shoving students, even white students. And I remember with another girl that I was protesting with, we ran to the bathroom and we realized the bathroom is a man's bathroom and the police is a man. So we got out and joined back and we were all crying. So that was my first time fighting for freedom, for justice, for human rights, for social justice. And I wanted to come back to Kodiak through our school.
And you've been working with high schoolers and future college students too, working with them through this. As you've been talking with them and keeping in touch with them, have they talked about what's going on right now with you and some of the things that they're seeing?
I think even before this, like early on, there are fights in our schools, and I don't think the community is aware unless they were part of it. But in my first year as a paraeducator, I witnessed so many students so upset that we don't give them the space, the time, the tools, the language to talk about racism, because they see it as fight. So it's physical, it's hurtful. They hear words like FOBS, which is fresh off the boat, you're a new immigrant. I was one of those students who, once I learned to be fluent in English, I started hating fellow Filipinos. And Dr. and Kuya EJ David can talk more about that. And I would tell students, I used to hate fellow Filipinos when I became quote-unquote successful in American education standards and part of NHS, 4.0, straight A's. But I'm like, this is not all that is success. Where is our culture? Where is our language? Because I start to hate my own brown skin and my language, my culture. So.
EJ, can you follow up on that? Especially, what Deborah was bringing up in terms of the education system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's not just the formal education system, right? Again, just to build off of what I was sharing earlier, I mean, it's, this, like, I just want to say, like, white supremacy and anti-blackness is part of this country, right? It's almost like, you know, it's in the air of this country. It's not surprising then, you know, that people who are trying to be part of this country, you know, like many immigrants, including Filipinos, end up breathing this air of anti-blackness and, you know, of pro-whiteness. It's almost inevitable, right? The reward systems in this country is designed to reward people for being anti-black and to be pro-white. You know, and so for many immigrants, anti-blackness and pro-whiteness is required to succeed. And many may even come to believe that they're required to survive, right? It's, you know, anti-blackness and pro-whiteness is just part of this Americanization process. And so, you know, so many immigrants get socialized this way. But for Filipinos, this socialization started a long time ago, you know, with colonialism, first by Spain and then the United States. And so, you know, that particular reward system, you know, that rewards pro-whiteness and punishes and rewards anti-blackness, it still exists today, right? Mm-hmm. For Filipinos and many immigrants, our success and even really our survival depended on how much we understood and adopted whiteness and how much, you know, we separate ourselves from blackness. And so, yeah. And so, you know, a lot of these are ingrained, and it's deeply mm-hmm. ingrained. You know, and going back to your question earlier about the connections then between, you know, the immigrants who many of whom come here for labor or for better opportunities from different parts of the world, and their connection to, you know, race and racism that's been happening in the United States. You know, I think that's a big part of our job here today, is for all of us to understand that, you know, our experiences are interconnected with each other. You know, there's a reason why many people from different parts of the world leave everything that they love and familiar with behind, right? That they take a big risk, and you know, both you know, in terms of their physical health, but in terms of their psychological and mental health as well. Mm-hmm. You know, they take a big risk to leave their home countries, you know, to come to the United States in search of a better life. There's a reason, you know, so many people do that. And, you know, it's not like people were genetically programmed to want to move to the United States.
Right.
There's no such thing as a, you know, I want to move to the United States instinct. You know, right? There's something huge that forced people from different parts of the world to want to come to the United States. Mm-hmm. And really, when it comes down to it, the reason is because the United States have been hogging all the resources of the world. You know, through oppression and colonialism and imperialism, right? And so, you know, so it's all connected, right? So when people come here, and we, you know, and Deborah kind of alluded to this, when a lot of immigrants come here, you know, we think that, you know, we come here for, you know, the cliche is we're here for a better life, and in many ways that's true, but I think, you know, we need to move beyond defining a better or successful, we need to go beyond defining that just in economic terms. I think we need, especially for those of us who have been here for a very long time, perhaps many, many generations now, we need to get away from that socialization. You know, we've been trained to equate wealth with wellness. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we need to go beyond that. I think we need to think of success in terms of how well our world is, and, you know, and a good measure for how well our world is whether injustice or oppression is happening in our world. And right now it's clear that injustice and oppression has been around for a very long time. And so for us to be successful, I think, for our society to, in our country, to get rid of this sickness, you know, this virus of this racism, this pandemic racism, for us to be well, and, you know, and address our original sin of mm-hmm. genocide and white supremacy and anti-blackness, you know, I think we need to see that, you know, make sure that oppression and injustice doesn't happen in these lands anymore.
So what tools or what language do we need to participate in those, you know, open and honest conversations about race and racism and bias in America, in Alaska, even in Kodiak? I know that's a big question for a short show, but do you have a couple things that you've seen?
Deborah can answer that.
I think what I learned from you, Kuya Dr. EJ David, is like me search, is it starts with a self, is how I went from it. Like readings and then like observing, reflecting on community, on family. Family is hard. Like within my own family, my own mother and my own brother, it's a constant struggle of tug of war because like internalized oppression, racism is in there.
Mm-hmm.
So if I can't change my family, how can I change other people if I can't even start with myself? Who am I? When in the protest for Kodiak on Black Lives Matter, I held a mirror and my brother and I talked about it. And I said, who am I? Because everybody can say Black Lives Matter, but who are we? Who am I for Black Lives Matter?
Yeah. So. No, that's really profound. I mean, that's powerful. You know, a lot of the work that's being done right now is... you know, focused on, especially for non-Black folks, right? We are being encouraged to look within our own communities and to address anti-Blackness within our own communities and even within ourselves, right? So, you know, so I think what Deborah just shared there is very important because, you know, right now it's easy for us to, like, you know, because of the pandemic, right? Many of us have been, you know, socially distancing or physically distancing or, you know, just staying in our homes for the most part. And for many of us, you know, we watch the news or we hear about, you know, the protests and the rallies, you know, and we are aware that there's something huge and important happening out there, right? That there's a revolution happening out there. And a lot of folks are getting involved in it, which is great. But I think in addition to, you know, a revolution happening outside, I think there needs to be a revolution that also needs to happen inside, like inside of us and inside of our own homes, because we all have a part to play in this. You know, this problem has been around for generations. And like I was sharing earlier, it's deeply, deeply embedded. And, you know, it's going to take a lot of work and it's going to take all of us, you know, with all of our strategies. Some strategies will work better than others. Some strategies will fail. You know, some strategies will be painful, but we have to try all of them.
Mm-hmm.
That's how big this problem is.
We, with previous guests, we've talked about some of the cultural signifiers that just kind of, you know, reify racism, colonialism, imperialism. You know, for instance, you know, down south, they are tearing down statues of Confederate soldiers and other slave traders. Here, there's a petition to get rid of Seward's statue, and I think the Captain Cook one. So, and
you
then also
have a Baranov statue in Kodiak.
No, but we have streets, and we talked about that also. We have streets named after Baranov, Rezanov.
And the museum changed its name.
The museum changed its name. So
they did. Okay.
So I'm curious. You know, are there any of those kinds of artifices that that you think that we need to look at and remove? You know, as it relates to, you know, race, or as it relates to the Asian American segment in Alaska. The first one that came to my mind was Captain Cook, and, you know, kind of what he stands for. But I don't know if you've thought about that at all.
I mean, do you want me to answer that?
Sure. Yeah. Go. Yes. Yeah. Give us some ideas. What are some things we can tear down?
my easy answer to that is take them all down. I am for all of that. You know, seriously, I really am. And it's not erasing history. It's actually representing history in a more accurate way. So, tear them all down. Captain Cook is one that is big here in Anchorage right now, the Captain Cook statue. But, you know, there's more. I think, you know, and again, going back to the Philippines, even, this is not just a United States thing, right? Going back to the Philippines, we have a statue of MacArthur, General.
Oh, really?
MacArthur. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh. You know, and you know, a lot of people see him as a savior, mm-hmm. like literally a white savior, because he said this, you know, his famous words was, you know, like, "I shall return." That's, mm-hmm. that's when he returned to the Philippines to save the Philippines from Japan during World War II, right? Mm-hmm. So he really represents the United States coming in, you know, swooping in to save the Filipinos. And, you know, and so now there's like statue of you know, Douglas MacArthur over there. But, mm. you know, so there's that, right? I mean, but how far do we go? You right. know, I, first of all, I'm all for that. Seriously, I'm all for that, right? You know, and then, you know, but I think to me, especially as a Filipino person, you know, we need to go deeper. I mean, you know, many Filipinos are very religious too. Filipinos are very Catholic. And I think many of us need to go and look at our gods. I'm not questioning the Catholic religion. I'm questioning the statues that we have. You know, when our Jesus Christ statues and Virgin Mary statues and all of our other saints, you know, have blue eyes and mm-hmm. light skin, right? When that's pretty far from reality, right? You know, we need to question that as well. Mm-hmm. So to me, it's not just the statues, which I said earlier, take them all down, but also let's look at our saints and our Jesus statues.
Interesting.
And Mary statues. Yeah.
Deborah, do you have any ideas or thoughts?
No, what? I've never gotten in too deep, but no, that's true about our statues, our saints too. So yeah, they're mostly light skinned. So
yeah,
that's
yeah.
interesting. And with everything that's going on right now, in what ways are you discouraged by with some of the discourse and rhetoric and actions and policies? In what ways are you discouraged right now?
Maybe Deborah should add.
Yeah,
I've been talking a lot.
I used to be angry a lot, especially in college and coming back to Kodiak, because once I come back, I see so many, like, from policies in school to curriculum, there is not a single Tagalog class in high school or mm-hmm. in our school. So I'm like questioning that, like, how is the lack of language being, like, what is that message sending to our students, Filipino students? And a lot of Filipino students have internalized oppression, and maybe the lack of ethnic studies, Filipino studies, Asian studies, Asian reading, Asian literature in our English classes can maybe have something mm-hmm. within that. So I started questioning policies and the lack of role models. Most of my Filipino role models, which is nothing wrong, I love our custodials, and they were the ones who pushed me, and they're mostly Filipino, but where are our Filipino teachers? Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. yeah.
So in what ways then are you inspired or hopeful?
I'm inspired by the young people that I work with. Like, every time I do art with them and they ask me, why did you come back? And sometimes they think I went to Harvard. I did not go to Harvard. I was not 4.0. I had D minuses, and So I tell them, I think Kodiak is worth coming back for. I left, and maybe I will leave again, but I will always come back. Kodiak nurtured me in some ways. It challenged me. It made me think a lot. It made me question a lot, especially on labor, money, immigration, especially salmon. Salmon migrates and returns. So I have this metaphor of the salmon. Most of salmon goes out to the ocean and comes back to where it was born. I don't know if I'm going to go back to the Philippines. I've went. But I have hope in young people, and especially within the arts. Mm-hmm. So
yeah. EJ, what about you? In what ways are you discouraged and then also hopeful?
Well, I'm discouraged regularly. you know, yes, seriously, because I'm discouraged because it's taken this long for us for many of us to get to this point, you know, and we've lost so many lives and so many families, you know, have been destroyed. So many communities have been destroyed already over generations, you know, so I'm discouraged by that. But I'm encouraged that it seems like a lot more people are growing now. And it seems like a lot more people are finally, you know, waking up now, and are willing to engage. And it's very difficult, right? I have to acknowledge this, you know, that this is very difficult, very awkward, very emotionally painful work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm encouraged by that growth. You know, I'm also encouraged that, you know, we're moving. I really see tangible steps. And, you know, the whole conversation right now about, you know, being anti-racist, I think is great, that we're moving beyond understanding these issues as, you know, either you're racist or not racist, but instead it's going, you know, from being racist to anti-racist. And, you know, at this point in our development as a society, the understanding that being a non-racist really doesn't help anymore, but instead you must actively, you know, be anti-racist. Mm-hmm. And that's what we need to heal and to get to where we want to go. And so I think, to me, that's a great movement. Yeah. So I'm encouraged by that.
Well, we have about 1 minute left. EJ, is there one final thing that you would like to say?
No, I just, you know, really want to say to everybody that, you know, acknowledge that this is very difficult work, and, you know, don't feel like you're alone in your own struggles. Don't feel like you're alone in terms of your confusion and the pain that you might be feeling. I think there's many of us who are here with you, and, you know, remember that we're all just growing and struggling together.
Mm-hmm. And Deborah, you get about 15 seconds.
I think community love is what I've learned from Evergreen. We can't mm-hmm. touch people right now, but at Evergreen, we would come into circle every night and step into the circle and recognize how far we've come and how much more steps we have to take. And there's power in the sense of touch. It's part of wellness. So. Sure.
Well, thank you, Deborah Batanga and Dr. EJ David. I pronounced that better this time. I apologize. Thank you so much for spending your noon hour with me.